High Priest,
Shimra said, turning his head toward Jaqen.
My apologies for delaying this vital discussion until now. I wished us all to give it our full attention. Please bring to everyone's attention this matter of heresy.
The better to make his presentation, Jaqen rose to his feet, his formal robes brushing the floor.
I too bring word of infiltration, he said.
He gave a ponderous pause, his head turning left to right to view each delegation in turn.
Not by dangerous spies,
Jaqen went on at last,
but by dangerous ideas. Priests from as far away as Dubrillion have reported that they have discovered unauthorized clandestine meetings among the lower orders. Meetings that claim to be religious ceremonies. Meetings where our own true way is denied and where treasonous heretical concepts are spread to the people.
Again the priest gave a solemn pause, as if to emphasize the gravity of his words. Shimra spoke into the silence.
Heresy is nothing new. Why is this of such great import? What sort of people take part in these ceremonies?
Shamed ones,
Jaqen said in a fierce whisper, as if the words themselves were obscene.
Shamed ones and workers. Precisely those castes needing the greatest guidance in matters of belief. Sometimes...
Again his voice dropped into a dramatic whisper.
Workers and shamed ones are found at the heretical ceremonies together.
And the nature of these heretical ceremonies?
Shimra prodded.
They venerate the Jedi,
Jaqen said. And this time, there was a murmur of outrage and surprise from the crowd.
The power of the Jedi has brought into question that the gods favor the Yuuzhan Vong. They believe that Yun Harlai and Yun Yamka are aligned with the twins Jaina and Jason Solo. And some of the heretics here on Yuuzhan Tar have in the last weeks begun to revere a being they call the Ganar. Ganar, of course, was the name of the Jedi who gave his life at the Battle of the World Well.
Shimra fingered his chin.
Where do the lower orders acquire these heresies?
The contamination was probably begun by slaves from the New Republic who labor alongside the workers and shamed ones,
Jaqen explained.
Slaves who admire the Jedi and their philosophy.
Nomanor heard a sigh from his own superior, Yug-Skell, but he was unable to work out what the sigh meant. The itching was a tormenting blast that seared Nomanor's flesh.
Have you any specific recommendations concerning this crisis?
The Supreme Overlord inquired. Jaqen bowed again.
Supreme One, my recommendations would demand absolute segregation of the slaves from our own people, so as to prevent the spread of inappropriate ideas. Public sacrifice of the heretics. Rewards for those who renounce their false paths and turn in their fellows.
Yug-Skell sighed again, more loudly this time, more wearily.
Supreme One, while I am certainly no friend of heresy, I must beg for less drastic methods. The combined labors of workers and shamed ones and slaves are necessary to advance our objectives. We have settlements to grow, food crops to raise in half-wrecked ecosystems, ships and weapons and other vital items to ripen and harvest, and Yuuzhan Tar itself to transform from a machine-poisoned artificial landscape into our perfect ancestral paradise.
The gods have placed me upon this throne as their instrument,
Shimra said.
And I agree with the High Priest that heresy may not be tolerated.
A satisfied look inflated Jaqen's face, a satisfaction that died away at the Overlord's next words.
But the High Prefect has a worthy point. When we're at war, It is foolish to disorder one's own forces. I don't want disruption among the workers at such a time, particularly since the workers are uneducated and may have adopted these beliefs without knowing their dangerous nature. Therefore...
He turned to the High Priest.
Priest Jaqen, I direct that the priests inform the people of the danger of this heresy. Tell them from me, from their supreme overlord, that the Jedi are not emanations of the gods. Tell them that such beliefs are unsound and forbidden. Those workers who are properly obedient to their superiors will then know to avoid any such contamination in the future.
And, the priest bowed, if they persist in their error...
You may kill any heretics you come across as publicly as you like,
Shimra said.
But I wish no large-scale investigation of the masses of workers, no rewards for accusations. When we win the war,
he nodded at Jaqen,
then we may have a more thorough inquiry. But for the present, I want the Yuuzhan Vong focused on defeating our enemies, not interrogating each other.
Jaqen's face had fallen, but he bowed and ceded with grace.
It shall be as you wish, Supreme One.
With great dignity, the priest returned to his desk. An agreeable expression crossed Shimra's face.
The Shamed One reminds me that I should ask the Shapers how their work progresses. How goes the world shaping of Yuuzhan Tar?
Supreme One, Jaqen Hul said. It goes well.
This news is pleasing,
Shimra said.
May we inquire of the Master whether there have been any problems?
A look of caution crossed the Master Shaper's face. He spoke quickly.
Some difficulties are inevitable, Supreme One. We are dealing with an alien environment that we have largely destroyed, and some of the native life forms, microscopic ones mostly, are proving persistent. Perhaps some of you have experienced some minor discomforts as the result of a fungal infection. We are attempting to,
And the nature of this minor discomfort?
The Supreme Overlord asked sweetly. Jaqen Hul hesitated.
Itching, Supreme One. Persistent itching. Nothing that any member of the higher castes cannot overcome with the discipline demonstrated in the course of earning rank and honor.
And you are, of course, a disciplined member of the highest caste,
Shimra said.
I have earned that distinction, Supreme One.
Shimra jumped to his feet, both fists smashing the arms of his throne, and roared at the top of his lungs.
Then why have I watched your surreptitious scratching through this whole meeting?
Jaqen Hul froze. The Supreme Overlord pointed one long clawed, implanted finger at the Master Shaper.
The world shaping of our new home world is being botched. Do you think I don't know that this plague has spread among our entire population here? Even I was infected within hours of landing on Yuuzhan Tar.
Supreme One,
Jaqen Hul said.
This complete reconstruction of an entire ecosystem is a complex matter, and though perfect success is within reach, it may take longer than our earlier estimates.
Shimra gave a scornful laugh.
It's not simply the fungus, though, is it, Master Shaper? Do you think I haven't heard of the Grashals intended for worker barracks that melted down into a mass of undifferentiated protein? Or the crop of villips that grew imprinted on some local animal and could only transmit the beast's screech of a mating call? The Blorash jelly that attempted to devour the Shapers who tendered it?
Supreme One,
Jaqen Hul attempted again to protest, then sagged in defeat.
I confess the fault.
Death!
Someone roared in Nomanor's ear. The Supreme Overlord himself growled his rage.
The world shaping shall be placed in more competent hands than yours,
he said. And then he turned to the group of warriors behind Savangla.
Commander, subalterns, take this impostor of a master shaper and carry him from this chamber. Execute him as soon as you get him out of our sight. Make him pay for his incompetence.
The shipyards of Mon Calamari glittered in the light of its sun, structures as graceful and strong as the ships they produced. Luke could see three cruisers partially completed, each in the MC-80 class, each different in appearance from the others. Half a dozen smaller craft were also in various stages of completion. Beneath a transparent dome, Luke and Mara stood on a graceful mezzanine thrust out over the main concourse of the Fleet Command Annex. Both gazed upward at the glittering silver shipyards afloat over the brilliant blue of the planet, both set off by the depthless velvet night of space and its spray of stars. The scene, the emptiness and beauty and the blue jewel of life set within it, settled around Luke like a cloak, a vision of peace and perfection. It's the turning point, he said. Mara gave him a quizzical look. Do you know what made you say that yesterday? She asked. After that strange moment, when he'd been touched by something that reminded him of Jason, he'd gone into deep meditation and a force trance in the hope of regaining the fleeting contact, but he'd been unable to find the answers to any of his questions. Now that he'd made contact with Jason a second time, he had begun to suspect he knew what had spoken to him. It may have come from the force itself, he said. Distant stars reflected in her jade-colored eyes as Mara considered this. The Force can offer us a view of what is to come, she said. But usually, it's a bit less spontaneous. I'm more sure than ever that Jason has a special destiny. He turned to Mara and squeezed her hand. Mara's eyes widened. Do you think Jason himself knows his destiny? I don't know. And I don't know if he would accept it if he did. He's always questioned his purpose as a Jedi, and even the meaning of the Force. I can't imagine him not questioning any fate that lay in store for him. His thoughts darkened, and he looked at Mara soberly. And a special destiny is not always something joyous or easy to bear. My father had a special destiny, and see where it took him. Luke raised his head to gaze out the great dome and to the dome of star-spangled blackness beyond, where Jason's coral craft, caught in the tractor beams of one of the fleet's MC-80A cruisers, was being carried to a nearby docking bay. The alien origin of the pod was clear. The coral hull and its bulbous organic form were unlike anything else in the sky. The graceful Mon Cal structures with their fluid curves imitated nature. But the Yuuzhan Vong pod was nature, an extragalactic nature at that. Doors slid open behind Luke, and a file of soldiers trotted onto the mezzanine, all armed and armored for combat, their faces masked to keep out alien poisons. The military was clearly taking no chances with the Yuuzhan Vong pod docking in vital New Republic space. Not only was an armed escort meeting the vessel, but the vessel was being docked not to Fleet Command, but to its annex, which could be completely sealed off from the headquarters itself and, if necessary, jettisoned into space by firing explosive bolts. Luke and Mara followed the soldiers to the docking port. The soldiers took positions left and right of the hatch and the droid directly in front of it, multiple weaponry directed forward. Luke looked at Mara. She was focused inward, her eyes half closed. I don't sense anything wrong, Mara said. I don't either. Without a word, Luke and Mara stepped between the battle droid and the docking bay hatch. Luke felt his nape hairs prickle at the thought of all that firepower directed at his back.
Sir?
The officer began. Luke made a gentle gesture. We'll be fine, Lieutenant, he said.
You'll be fine. Yes, sir.
There was a gentle tremor as tractor beams brought the pod to the hatch and a hiss as the lock pressurized. Then lights blinked on the inner hatch and it swung open. Jason stood in the open hatch. He was dressed in a kind of colorless poncho, clearly of Yuuzhan Vong origin, tied at the waist with what looked like a vine. He had lost weight, and his ropey muscles flexed plainly under pale, sickly skin that didn't seem to hold an ounce of fat. Scars, healed but still vivid, striped his bare arms and legs. It was Jason's face, however, that showed the most change. Beneath an untrimmed mane of hair and a short, equally scruffy beard was a sharp, chiseled face. Any remains of baby fat burned away, with brown eyes that showed an adult, restless, penetrating intelligence. The relentless eyes turned toward Luke and Mara and blossomed at once with warmth and recognition. Luke felt his heart surge with joy. He and Mara each took an involuntary step forward, and Jason sped from the hatch and his arm swept out to embrace them both. Laughter burst from all three at the joyous reunion. Tears stung Luke's eyes. The turning point, he thought. Yes, from this point, we turn from sorrow toward joy. My boy, the word spilled from Luke. My boy. It was Mara who broke the embrace. She took a half step back, her hand gently placed on Jason's chest as if to touch the heart of him. You've been injured. Yes. The word was simple, accepting. Are you all right? Mara asked. Do you need a healer? No, I'm fine. Verger healed me. It was then that Mara and Luke turned to Jason's companion. The piebald little alien had taken a few steps into the station and was looking at the ranks of armed soldiers with what seemed to be both skepticism and humor. I owe Verger thanks of my own, it seems, Mara said. Verger turned her wide, slanting eyes toward Mara. My tears served you? Yes, I'm cured, apparently. Many years ago, Noma Noor poisoned you with a coom spore. Did you know that? Yes, I know, Mara hesitated. But healing tears... How is it done? Verger's feathery whiskers rippled in what may have been a slight smile. It is a long story. Perhaps someday I will tell you. Luke faced Jason again and found the young man grinning at him. Luke grinned back. And then an idea struck him. We've got to tell your parents you're alive, he said, and your sister. Jason's grin faded slightly. Yes, I tried to contact them through the Force, but yes, they should have official word as well. With the young man between them, their arms around Jason's shoulders and waist, Luke and Mara walked past the guards to the mezzanine rail. Verger followed in silence. Welcome back, Luke said. Welcome back, young Jedi. I'm not the only one you should welcome back, Jason said, with a nod toward Verger. Luke turned to Verger. Welcome, of course, he said politely. But I don't know where you're from, so I can't be sure whether you're back or not. That is a paradox without an easy answer, Verger said. Jason laughed. That's true. Haven't you guessed? And when Luke and Mara turned to him, Jason laughed again. Verger is a Jedi of the Old Republic. She's been living among the Yuuzhan Vong for more than 50 years. How? Mara began. Another long story, Verger said. Perhaps for another time. You keep your secrets, Vergère, Luke observed.
I didn't survive by offering my secrets to anyone who might be interested, Vergère said.
We don't want to pump you for information unnecessarily, Luke said. But I do hope we'll be able to talk sooner or later.
Vergère's feathers ruffled a bit, then smoothed. Perhaps it was her version of a shrug.
We may speak, certainly, but please recall what I told you earlier. I am not a partisan of your new republic.
What does hold your allegiance? Luke asked.
The Jedi Code, and what you would call the Old Republic.
There is no Old Republic. Luke tried to speak gently.
But there is. As long as I draw breath, she said, the Old Republic lives.
There was a moment of silence, and then Luke spoke. Long may it live, Vergère, he said. Vergère bobbed her head.
I thank you, young master.
And then she fell silent and turned to look out over the concourse, her eyes sweeping left and right, gazing at the busy people and droids moving swiftly about their business, the ships, the cargo moving back and forth. It was a world, Luke thought, that Vergère had abandoned 50 years ago. She had lived among a people immeasurably strange, and Luke wondered how alien Vergère's own native galaxy seemed to her now, with its many species, its bustle, and its humming, clicking, chattering machines. The reunion did not end with the reappearance of Jason. When Luke and his party were brought into Admiral Sov's suite, Luke found that Sov wasn't alone. Sitting on the long, curved, cream-colored sofa behind their Sulliston host were two familiar figures, posed like a painterly study in white, a white-uniformed Mon Calamari and a white-haired human.
Admiral Akbar! Winter!
The joy of reunion with his old friends died, however, as he saw Akbar struggle to rise from the sofa, and he had to force the smile to remain on his face. Akbar leaned heavily on Winter's arm as he stood. The amphibian's shiny pink skin had turned grayish and dull. When he spoke, his words were lisped out of a slack mouth that gasped for air.
Master Skywalker, friends, I regret to say that living out of water is a burden for me these days.
Please don't stand then, Luke said. He went to Akbar's side and, with Winter's help, eased the Admiral again onto the sofa.
Have you been ill? He asked the Admiral, but his eyes went to Winter.
The white-haired woman looked at Luke and gave a brief nod, a quiet confirmation. Winter approached Jason and wrapped him in a long, thorough, and powerful embrace.
Welcome back, Jason, she said simply.
Will you all please make yourselves comfortable?
Cien Sov said in his nasal voice.
Shall I send for refreshment?
Luke turned to Sov and felt mild embarrassment at having ignored the Supreme Commander of the New Republic Defense Force for so long.
I beg your pardon, Admiral. I should.
The Sulliston made a dismissive gesture.
Since I asked you here to meet old friends, I can hardly object if you let them take precedence over me.
His black plate eyes turned to Admiral Akbar.
For that matter, I wish the Admiral would take precedence over me during this war.
He wasn't alone in that wish, Luke knew. It couldn't have been easy for Cien Sov to be the successor to a legend like Akbar, and Sov's modesty and hard work were hardly the sort of gifts to fill the void left by Akbar's genius and charisma.
I do not believe, Sov said gently, that I have met all your party.
Luke apologized again and introduced Jason and Vergère. Sov complimented them both on their survival skills.
And young Solo, he added, I am pleased to report that your sister is not only well, but has taken part in a major victory at Obroa Sky.
Honest relief broke across Jason's face at the news.
I was worried, he said. I sensed she was in a situation.
An entire Yuuzhan Vong fleet was attacked by our fleet, combined with a squadron of Happens. General Farlander was quite explicit in his praise of Jaina. It appears she was responsible for much of the operational plan.
A light began pulsing on Sov's comm unit, and he put a small listening device to his ear for a private message.
"Your pardon," he said, "but I alerted Fleet Intelligence once I understood that Jason and a defector were on their way. They would like to debrief the both of you."
His plate eyes turned to Jason.
"If you're physically strong enough, of course."
Luke couldn't help but notice that Verger, unlike Jason, was not being given a choice. "I'm willing." Jason rose from his chair, then turned to his avian companion. "Verger?"
"Certainly."
The feathered Jedi wore the same wry, skeptical expression she had worn when she first stepped out of the airlock and seen the soldiers with weapons at the ready.
"Verger may be detained a little longer than Jason, unfortunately,"
Sov said, which only increased the cynical look in Verger's eye. Verger padded ahead of Jason as the two made their way out. Through the briefly open door, Luke caught a glimpse of Idar Nilykirka, the Temarian director of Fleet Intelligence, at the head of a group of guards, and then the door closed. He turned to CN Sov.
"You're taking every precaution," he said.
"Yuuzhan Vong's use of defectors and infiltrators is very effective," the Sullustan said. "Before I free her to go where she wishes, I want to make sure that Verger is what she claims to be."
"I know what she claims to be," Luke said. "I just wonder how she can be expected to prove it."
"Now remember," Leia said, "we call it the Remnant, but to these people it's still the Empire."
"An empire without an emperor," Han commented.
She patted his hand. "For which we may be thankful, my dear." The Millennium Falcon had finally completed its long, dangerous crossing of enemy-dominated space to the Imperial capital of Bastion. A squadron of Imperial Star Destroyers flew escort close alongside, their long, wide hulls almost walling off the stars. Their destination wasn't the planet at all, but a super Star Destroyer that stretched a full 4 kilometers left and right from the docking port, and which carried a crew larger than the population of cities. In the docking bay, a military escort met Leia, officers quivering at the salute. Behind them was a military band that drummed and thumped them the 50 or so meters to their shuttle, a deluxe Lambda-class vehicle that featured a passenger compartment with fixtures of solid gold, and a soft-spoken military aide who offered drinks and refreshments to fortify Leia and Han for the 10-standard-minute trip to the world's surface.
"Did you notice when Vena Dorja left us?" Leia asked.
Han gave a startled look over one shoulder. The only person to share the compartment with them was the aide, who had perched on a chair a tactful distance away, far enough to permit them to speak in lowered voices without being overheard.
"No," Han answered. "I'll lay you a wager that Grand Admiral Palian is listening to a report right now," Leia said.
"I don't take sucker bets."
The shuttle began to float upward as it approached Imperial headquarters, a stupendous monolith of polished black marble, gleaming bronze and dark reflective windows, with shield generators and turbo laser installations perched on a series of stepped back ledges, from which emerged a final slim pinnacle that stretched upward to a bright crystalline starburst at the very top. It was toward the starburst that the shuttle rose. It lined up on one of the long crystal rays of the starburst, then brought its docking arm to its tip and hovered there effortlessly on its repulsor lifts. The aide rose from his seat and stepped to the hatch. "I hope you enjoyed your flight," he said. And at a touch of his fingers, the hatch hissed open. The crystal ray, fragile-seeming from the ground, was actually a quite sturdy docking arm, transparent crystal supported by a strong silver alloy skeleton. Leia thanked the aide, straightened her shoulders, and marched down the tube, with Han one pace behind and off her right shoulder. After about 60 meters, the docking arm ended in a large, glittering room roofed with faceted crystal. To Leia's surprise, she realized it was an arboretum, filled with thousands of bright exotic blossoms spilling out of their neat rows. As if in deliberate contrast to the brilliant color that rose in profusion behind him, Gilad Palion, dressed in the plain white uniform of an Imperial Grand Admiral. He had put on 10 kilos since Leia had last seen him, and his hair and bristling mustaches were white.
Princess,
Palion gave her a courtly bow. Supreme Commander,
I received an urgent message for you from New Republic Fleet Command, he said. They failed to contact you and wished me to relay the message to you.
Leia took an involuntary step back as her heart gave a lurch.
Jaina.
Han's strong hands caught Leia's shoulders and buoyed her up. A smile drew itself across Palion's face.
Good news, Princess, he said. Your son, Jason, has escaped the Yuuzhan Vong. He's arrived at Mon Calamari in good health.
Leia felt her knees weaken and willed herself to remain upright. Without Han's support, she might not have succeeded.
Yes!
Han hissed in her ear.
Did you hear that, Leia? Jason's alive!
His arms wrapped her from behind, and she felt the ferocious joy of his embrace. Dizzily, she realized that he hadn't entirely believed her last assurance about Jason's survival. With effort, Leia summoned speech.
Thank you, Supreme Commander, she said. You've...
Still wrapping Leia in his arms, Han gave an unrestrained whoop of pleasure that nearly deafened her.
You've made us very happy,
she finished, more understated than she would have liked.
If you would like to use our channels to send your son a message, you are welcome,
Palion offered.
Certainly. Thank you.
Han's message,
Way to go, Sprout,
was composed quickly enough, but Leia's was more measured and took longer.
Once again, Jason, she dictated into Admiral Palion's comm. You have answered a mother's prayers.
Palion gestured toward the garden and its profusion of bright blossoms.
Shall I show you my garden? He asked. We can speak privately about your embassy.
Leia hesitated.
Won't I need to speak to others as well? The Empire is not run by committee, Princess,
Palion reminded.
If I find that the Moff Council needs to know the substance of your message, then I'll be the one who tells them.
Palion drew Leia and Han along the rows of blossoms, pointing with obvious pride to his hybrid native orchids, to rainbow-colored fungi from Bakura, to lofty yellow Pyderian blossoms that so strangely resembled the moon's tall, aloof sentience.
The New Republic, Leia said, would like to request that the Empire furnish us its maps of routes through the Deep Core. Those, Palion said, are among our most closely held secrets.
During the rebellion, the Empire had held out for years in the galaxy's deep core. The Imperials' knowledge of the narrow, twisting paths among the closely packed star masses was unmatched. Though the rebels had finally cleared their enemies out of the core, it had been grinding work, and probably a good many of the Empire's routes lay undiscovered.
There are no more Imperial bases in the deep core, Leia said, so the information has no value to you. On the other hand, you're aware of how useful such bases would be to the New Republic now that Coruscant is gone.
And, she added, seeing the skeptical look on Palion's face,
you know that the longer we tie up the Yuuzhan Vong in mopping up operations around the Deep Core, the less likely they are to look at Bastion as their next conquest. I have no fear for the safety of my capital, Palion said.
Once, Leia said, I had no fear for the safety of Coruscant.
I hope you can offer me something in exchange for this information, he said. The Moff Council won't want these secrets given up.
Leia smiled. Didn't you just say that you'd tell them what you wanted them to know?
I will. But unfortunately, he added. Their busy little minds are capable of drawing their own conclusions, and it would be useful for them to know that something of equal value was given in exchange. Leia had anticipated this. Offer, counter-offer, outright payment, blackmail. All the arsenal of politics. The New Republic would be pleased to offer an exchange. Everything we know about the Yuuzhan Vong. Weapons, tactics, communications, internal organization. The whole package.
Communications?
Palian pounced on the word.
You've discovered that secret?
We have, Leia said. Obsolete call routes in exchange for the greatest secret of the Yuuzhan Vong, Palian mused. I predict no trouble with the Moff Council. They came to the end of the row of plants, and Leia discovered a circular space surrounded by the trunks of Gamorrean coolsap trees, with their dense canopy providing an arbor overhead. Beneath the foliage, a grand buffet had been laid out on a hollow circular table. A long array of silver chafing dishes, along with great bowls of salads, fruit, and a selection of desserts and pastry.
Please forgive the informality and help yourselves, Palian said.
Leia and Palian talked through the meal, but of matters of no importance. Talking of matters of no importance was an important political skill. Later, over cups of Naris Bud tea, Leia resumed. After you've had the opportunity to review the information we've gathered on the Yuuzhan Vong, she began, I hope the Empire will accept our offer of alliance against the enemy. Palian gave her a dubious look.
I can present your offer to the Moff Council, but I know what they'd say.
Yes?
They would ask how the Empire would benefit from this action.
Surely the Empire would benefit by helping to rid the galaxy of a menace like the Yuuzhan Vong. Palian considered this, then shook his head.
I would rather not go to the Moff Council with this offer. They won't approve it.
Why not?
Because, quite frankly, the New Republic is losing its war, Palian said. If we join with you now, you'll only drag us down with you.
He hesitated.
That's what the Moff Council would say.
That's what you say, Leia translated.
Now, if you start to win some real victories, Palian went on,
then the Moff's position would be altered. But you'd have to convince us you're not dragging us into a disaster. His dark eyes looked quite solemnly into hers.
And that, Princess, is the truth.
Well, Leia said, that's that. Something shifted in Palian's face.
On the other hand, if you could offer us something to the Moff Council, something concrete.
Such as? Leia queried.
The Moff Council is impressed by real things, Palian said. Solid things. For instance, if the Empire could retain any worlds we took from the Yuuzhan Vong, it would impress the Moffs considerably.
Not, he added, at the protest in Leia's face, any worlds that still have your population on them. Only those the Yuuzhan Vong have remade for themselves. He nodded confidingly.
I think the Moff Council is most impressed by worlds, Princess.
The stars streamed aft, and Han sat back in the pilot's seat and gave Leia a grim smile.
Well, he said, that's that. Next stop, Mon Calamari.
The day after their meeting in the Arboretum, Leia and Han had returned Grand Admiral Palian's hospitality by having him to dinner on board the Millennium Falcon. Palian and Leia exchanged discs. He gave her the charts of the deep core hyperspace routes, and she gave him everything the New Republic knew about the Yuuzhan Vong. Leia followed Han to the galley. He looked at her.
So were those core charts worth this trip?
Yes. We can keep fighters in the core for years, raiding the Yuuzhan Vong. Han looked grim.
He had a lot of nerve asking for our planets.
They're not our planets anymore, which I suppose was his point. But I think that was just the test. If I'd agreed to his idea, it would have told him how desperate we were.
"Pray to the partner Yun Shuno," the shamed one said. "Pray that her promises will soon be fulfilled. Pray that the Jedi soon liberate us from those who oppress us with terror and violence." "So we pray,"
the tiny group echoed. Some of them, even as they chanted the response, did not cease from scratching at the fungus that tormented them.
"So we pray,"
Nomanor echoed the words with the others. Wearing an Ooglith masker that disguised him as a common worker, he had infiltrated the tiny heretical sect. This was his second meeting. There were fewer than a dozen in the little group, which met in the shadowy lower levels of a minor office of the Intendant's, a place normally empty at night. The group was led by a shamed one, a former member of the Intendant caste whose arm implant had gone spectacularly wrong, and still dripped a trail of slime wherever he went. It was plain curiosity that had driven Nomanor to infiltrate the sect. Was this group such a mighty threat to orthodoxy as High Priest Jaqen had said? Was the message of redemption by Jedi so powerful that it constituted a danger to the Yuuzhan Vong and all they stood for? When the meeting was over, Nomanor made his way out of the structure through a door used only by workers. The night of Yuuzhan Tar was cool and refreshingly free of the scent of the shamed one's rotting flesh. Scratching himself on the elbows, Nomanor turned back toward the city, and in the sky saw the spiraling rainbows created by the Dovin Basals on the great hovering palace that housed Shimra. Now there is power, he thought. But what rainbows have these heretics cast? He walked back toward the settled area, and to his surprise, found himself walking along a clearly defined road. He hadn't realized that the Shapers had grown roads out this far. And then he saw something coming toward him along the road, a riding Quednak with someone astride it. Nomanor stepped to the side of the road and, in his character as a simple worker, bowed in servitude with his arms crossed. It was only as the scaled, six-legged creature thumped by that Nomanor thought he recognized the silhouette of the rider. Anami. That bulbous, misshapen head was unmistakable. What was the Supreme Overlord's familiar doing here, so far from the palace and any of the centers of government? Nomanor thought for a long moment as the beast thudded into the distance, and then followed. Kashyyyk was a brilliant green crescent in the glittering darkness of space, and around it, Jaina could see the silver gleam of the New Republic capital ships that had turned the planet into one of the New Republic's forward bases. Lobaka growled cheerfully. "I'd love to join your family on Kashyyyk," Jaina said. "A furlough in the green trees would be ideal." Lights flashed on the comm system that Lobaka had jacked into the Yuuzhan Vong ship, and the unit tweedled.
"Message from the flagship," Loey said.
"What does the general want?" Jaina wondered.
"It's not Farlander. The message is from Admiral Creefy. He wants you and General Farlander to report on board Ralroost. At your earliest convenience, he says."
And now we pay for our success, Jaina thought.
"Oh, great warrior. Is this the Damutek of the noble intendant Huli Krek?"
Tattoos on the warrior's face creased as she scowled at Nomanor. She waved her ampistaff in the direction of the city.
"You are not permitted here. Get your miserable carcass back to your barracks."
It was not the Damutek of Huli Krek, whom Nomanor had just invented on the spot, but it was the heavily guarded Damutek to which the shamed one Anami had traveled.
A fact proven by Anami's riding beast, seen standing before the building and quietly licking a fungus-covered rock. There was at least a platoon of warriors either on guard or camped in the vicinity. So whatever the function of the building might be, it was of some importance. And standing in the entrance to the Damutech, a pair of Yuuzhan Vong were in conversation, their distinctive living headdresses marking them as shapers.
Oh, woe! Oh, misery! Oh, unhappiness!
Slapping himself on the head repeatedly, Nomanor pranced about in a little circle. This was enough to attract two more warriors, one of them a subaltern, unusually short with stringy hair.
What is the meaning of these?
The subaltern demanded. The warrior explained, and the subaltern turned to Nomanor.
There is no holy crack here. Now get back to where you belong.
But I belong at the Damutech of Holy Crack,
Nomanor wailed. He began slapping himself again.
Oh, woe! My supervisor will punish me!
I'll punish you if you don't get out of here, the subaltern said.
He cocked his amphistaff over his shoulder.
Where is this Damutech?
Nomanor asked.
What is the name of this place so I can explain to my master Holy Crack how I came to be here?
This Damutech is for shapers only, the subaltern said.
His amphistaff slashed down like a whip, and fire burned along Nomanor's back.
Now clear out before they stick you in their blasted cortex.
Nomanor scuttled away sideways like a gray crustacean, then rose to his feet and scurried down the road. Cortex was a shaper term for some kind of shaping protocol or technique, which meant that this was a shaper project secret enough to move some distance out of the capital, where its business could go on unobserved, and important enough to station warriors as its permanent guard. The two shapers seen in the entrance only confirmed this. And Anami was a part of it somehow. Jaina combed her hair and changed out of her coveralls to walking-out dress, which was as smart as she could get for the Admiral, since her full-dress uniform hadn't caught up to her as she moved through her last several postings. Walking-out dress, however, was still sufficiently formal that she felt uncomfortable, and kept tugging at her collar as she sat with Farlander in the shuttle that carried her to the Admiral's Bothan assault cruiser. When they reached Creefy's quarters, they were kept waiting a quarter of an hour by a secretary until they were called in to meet the Admiral. Creefy was alone in a formal briefing room, standing at the head of a long, empty table. Farlander and Jaina approached the Admiral and saluted. General Farlander and Major Solo reporting as ordered, Admiral. Creefy's milk-white fur rippled as he returned the salute.
You have your report.
Yes, sir.
Farlander handed the Admiral a disc. Creefy dropped it in a reader and glanced at the information.
One capital ship lost, another disabled, he said. Nearly 100 starfighters lost, with only 40% of the crews rescued. All in an unauthorized action to chase an enemy supreme commander who wasn't even there, and following an operational plan devised by a junior lieutenant.
Yes, sir, Farlander admitted.
And a stunning victory, Creefy continued, still reading. 7 enemy capital ships destroyed, a pair of transports holding thousands of warriors, and a supreme commander killed along with his flagship. My warmest congratulations to the both of you.
He shook Farlander's hand.
Brilliant work. I will put you both in for commendations.
Jaina flushed at the warmth of the Admiral's response.
Thank you, sir, she murmured. And then she was surprised to see Creefy step before her, then pause for a long moment with his gold-flecked violet eyes fixed on her.
Your brother Jason has escaped the enemy and has arrived safely on Mon Calamari, Creefy said. When you have a chance to catch up with your personal messages, no doubt you'll hear the story in more detail.
Jaina stared at Creefy in cold astonishment.
Are you sure, sir? she said. I saw him and the Yuuzhan Vong. I was there.
Of course it's true, Creefy said. Your brother's been on the Hollow News. He's very much alive.
She groped her way to a chair, and as she lowered herself into it, she managed to remember the niceties. She looked up at Traced Creefy. Thank you, Admiral, she said. I appreciate your telling me this way.
It was the least I could do for our new hero, Creefy said, as he took the seat at the head of the table. You and General Farlander have given us a great victory, and I would like you to give me an informal briefing now, before I arrange a full-staff conference tomorrow.
Very good, sir, Farlander said.
Your tactics involving the Jedi? Creefy asked. Creating a kind of meld? Were they successful?
They worked, but we had too few units with Jedi in them, Jaina said. We need more Jedi in order to make it really useful.
I'll put in a request for as many Jedi pilots as they can send us. Who knows what the High Command will make of it?
Who knows? Jaina repeated.
I'd like to share some other news, Creefy said. I've just returned from Bothawi, where the mourning for my cousin Borsk Fela has now ended. While I was there, I managed to meet with a good many important Bothans, and I'm pleased to report that I achieved some success.
That's very good, sir, Farlander said.
As you may know, intrigue is common among Bothans, Creefy said. The periods when we are united as a species are rare, and usually occur only when we are facing a common danger, as we did during the Empire. But now, as a result of Chief of State Fela's death, the Bothan Council has decided to declare that the highest state of war now exists between Bothawi and the Yuuzhan Vong.
Something in Creefy's phrasing caused Jaina to look up. But you're at war already, aren't you? Creefy looked solemn.
We've been in what you could describe as an ordinary state of war. The highest state of war, it is called Arkrey, was not declared even in the days of Palpatine. Arkrey has been declared only twice in our past, and was declared only when our survival as a species seemed to be at stake. It means that we will declare total war against our enemy, and not cease until he has been completely destroyed.
You've destroyed species? General Farlander asked.
In the distant past, Creefy said, we did not cease our Arkrey until our enemies were destroyed to the last individual, their names written out of the histories, and their planets reduced to dust floating on the stellar wind. So shall we do with the Yuuzhan Vong. They shall become dust, or we shall become dust ourselves.
Jaina looked at Creefy's determined face, and a chill ran up her spine at the quiet certainty that lay behind his words. Cal Omas announced his Jedi plan and his official candidacy at mid-morning before an army of Hollow journalists in the lobby of the building that the Mon Calamari had donated for the Senate's use. Luke stood quietly behind Cal amid a group of friends and supporters, not wanting to attract attention, but when Cal called for questions, at least half were directed to Luke, and Cal finally called Luke to his side. Are you and the Jedi supporting Counselor Omos' candidacy? He was asked.
I hope to be able to work with any chief of state, Luke said. But I'm supporting Counselor Omos' plan for restoring the Jedi Council.
The Hollow journalist was skeptical. So you're saying you could work with Fior Rodan if he wins the election?
I will work with Counselor Rodan if he will work with me, Luke smiled.
Rodan says the Jedi Council is your means of seizing power, someone else called. Cal stepped to the front.
May I answer that one?
He scowled at the crowd, and there was a touch of anger in his voice.
This isn't some little jumped-up lobbyist or politician we're talking about.
This is Luke Skywalker. There isn't a single person in the New Republic who doesn't owe him a profound debt of gratitude. So if anyone suggests that Luke Skywalker is involved in some kind of shabby power play, I'd suggest that person not only can't read history, but is incapable of reading human character.
There was actually applause at that, and not just from Cal's supporters.
I'd like to thank you for your words on my behalf, Luke said later, after the meeting had broken up.
Cal grinned. Did you like the hint of anger? I thought I judged that pretty well.
Luke was surprised. You were faking that?
Oh, no, it was real enough, Cal said. I just let it show enough to get the top spot in tonight's Holo News.
He rubbed his chin.
The question is, did I let it show enough?
Luke left Calomus pondering this and other political questions and shuttled up to the New Republic Fleet Command Annex, where Verger was still undergoing interrogation. Jason had been released after a few hours debriefing, but the fleet showed every inclination to keep Verger indefinitely.
She has given us reams of material, said Intelligence Director Nilay Kirka. She's also eaten about twice her weight. I've never seen such an appetite.
If you had to eat Yuuzhan Vong cooking for 50 years, you'd be hungry for our food too.
Luke asked the Temerian if he could speak to Verger himself, and Nilay Kirka was agreeable. He found Verger in her cell, squatting on a stool and watching a Holo transmission from the planet, a news program that featured Luke and Cal Omas.
Incapable of reading human character.
Verger waved the Holo to silence as Luke entered.
In my time, she said, a Jedi Master would not have intervened so with the Senate and an election.
In your time, Luke said, it wouldn't have been necessary.
Verger accepted this with a graceful bob of her unlikely head. Luke gathered up his robe and sat cross-legged on the chair before her.
Out with it, he thought.
I've spoken to Jason about his captivity, he said.
Your apprentice bore it well, Verger said. You are to be congratulated.
Anger swirled in Luke's heart. Exhaling a deliberate slow breath, he banished it.
Perhaps Jason didn't have to bear it at all, he said. He said that you led him into captivity no less than 3 times.
Verger's head bobbed.
I did.
He was tortured, Luke said. Torture to the point of death. And you led him to it. You could have escaped with him earlier than you did.
Yes.
Why?
Verger held herself still, as if listening intently to a voice that Luke couldn't hear.
It was necessary that your apprentice learn certain lessons.
Lessons in betrayal?
Luke tried to keep the anger out of his voice.
Torture, helplessness, slavery, degradation, pain?
Those, naturally, Verger said blandly. But chiefly, he had to be brought to the edge of despair and then over it.
Her tilted eyes gave Luke an intense, searching gaze.
You taught him well, but it was necessary for him to forget every lesson you gave him, by showing that none of the gifts you gave him could help him.
Necessary?
Luke's outrage finally broke through his reserve.
Necessary for what? Or for who?
Verger tilted her head and looked at him.
Necessary for my plans, of course.
Who gave you?
Luke suppressed his anger.
Who gave you the right?
A right that is given is as useless as a virtue that is given, Verger said. Rights are used, or they have no value, just as virtues must be performed. I took the right to lie to your apprentice, to betray him, to torment him, and enslave him.
Was there a point to this?
Luke gazed at her. Verger nodded.
Of course, young master. Jason Solo had to be bereft of friends or relatives, of teachers and knowledge and the Force and everything that could help him. in that state of complete disinterest. Everything else having failed him, he had no choice but to be himself, to choose and to act. Her voice turned thoughtful. I regret the means, of course, but I used what I had to hand. I tricked the Yuuzhan Vong into preserving his life and inflicting the embrace of pain. I made the Yuuzhan Vong my instrument. Perhaps that was my greatest accomplishment. And the point of this? Luke asked. Once, or so the story that Jason told me suggests, you had your own props similarly knocked away, deprived of help, of hope, of weapons, blasted by the Emperor's Force Lightning. What did you have then? You had only yourself. Likewise, it was necessary to reduce Jason to himself in order that, with every other door closed to him, he might embrace his destiny.
Destiny. For the second time in 2 days, the word rose in connection with Jason. And deep in his bones, in complete inner certainty, Luke knew that Vergère was right. That somewhere in the complex weavings of fate, Jason had a special place. And what do you know of Jason's destiny? Luke asked.
I believe that Jason is intimately connected with the fate of the Yuuzhan Vong, she answered.
He can destroy them? Luke asked.
Destroy them? Save them? Transform them?
The tilted eyes opened, gazed expressionlessly into Luke's.
Perhaps all three.
Can he open them to the Force? Luke asked.
I don't know if that's possible.
Luke felt bitterness poison his heart. Then the Yuuzhan Vong will remain outside.
Vergère's head tilted. That bothers you?
I think it was easier dealing with enemies from the dark side. I also think you're very good at interrogation. This conversation started with me asking the questions.
If you didn't want me to ask questions, Vergère said, you should have explained that at the beginning.
Very well. Luke rose to his feet. Her head craned after him on its odd little neck.
But I will ask one more question before you leave, she said. You may answer it or not, as you like.
Ask, Luke said. Her eyes blinked slowly.
If the Force is life, and the Yuuzhan Vong are alive, and you cannot see them in the Force, then is the problem with the Yuuzhan Vong, or is it with your perceptions?
Luke, choosing not to answer, nodded politely and left. Mon Calamari, goggle eyes gleaming in the floodlights, swam easily past Kal Omas's window. Mara looked up as Luke entered.
Vergère, she said.
It's complicated, Luke said. I'll explain later. He looked at Kal Omas, who was sharing a hasty meal with Mara. What news from the Senate? Kal swallowed the mouthful he'd been chewing and said,
The Senate had a vote this afternoon.
I got 28%.
And Rodan?
35. And Kola Quist got 10%, Mara added. And Talaam Ranth, 18. Puo got 3 votes total, though he sent a message saying that the vote was illegal and that he was still chief of state. The rest of the votes were abstentions or scattered among half a dozen others.
Where's Trebek? Luke asked. Talking to Kola Quist, Kal said. By now it must be clear to Kola that he can't win, so we need to find out what it would take for him to drop out of the race and endorse me.
I'm sure Rodan's asking him the same thing, Mara said.
And then we ask the same thing of Talaam Ranth, Kal continued. Though I don't suppose Talaam is ready to answer yet. He'll want a few more floor votes first, just to show what a valuable ally he could be.
What's he likely to want?
A place on the advisory council, certainly, Kal said. Plus he'll want places in the government for his friends. He's always been very serious about controlling patronage.
In that case, Luke said, sighing,
You may as well point out that if the war goes on, his people will gain access to a lot of military contracts. Cal grinned.
We'll make a politician of you yet.
I hope not, Luke said.
Luke and Mara found Jason in the suite when they returned. Jason sat on the floor in a meditation pose, and Luke could feel the force surrounding him, swirling in great eddies through the boy's body, cleansing, healing, strengthening, and restoring.
The intelligence people are done with me, for the present, Jason said. I think there'll be a while with Verger, though. I spoke with her myself, Luke said.
Jason's smile broadened.
What did you think?
I think she's not simple.
I'm still your apprentice, Master Skywalker, Jason said. Do you have any assignments for me?
A very difficult assignment, Jason, Luke said.
You're to take a vacation.
Jason was surprised.
What kind of vacation?
Luke almost laughed.
Whatever kind you like. You've been through a lot, and I want you to take the time to think about it. Many of your friends are here. I want you to reconnect with them. Meditate as you were doing. Try to discern what it is that the Force wants for you, if anything, and whether it's what you want for yourself.
Because he needed to know, he returned. He needed to know whether or not he was doomed, and along with him, the revived Jedi Order he had created. Verger peered up at Luke from a perch on the stool.
Come to ask more questions? I should warn you. I've already spent my day answering questions from Fleet Intelligence, and I'm tired of it.
I'll trade you, Luke said. One of my questions for one of yours.
Her whiskers rippled.
You didn't answer my last.
If you can't detect the Yuuzhan Vong in the Force, is the fault with the Yuuzhan Vong or with your perceptions?
Luke settled onto the chair opposite Verger.
You left out a third possibility. The fault may be in the Force.
Verger's feathery crest rose in surprise.
Is this your answer?
No, I don't have an answer. Do you?
Verger paused for a long moment, as if mentally rehearsing an answer.
Before I can answer, I need to know whether Jason told you that I chose to accompany the Yuuzhan Vong.
You spent 50 years with them, Luke said. And so if anyone should have an answer to the question of whether the Yuuzhan Vong are outside the Force, it should be you.
Yes.
There was a long pause while Luke waited for Verger to continue.
If the Yuuzhan Vong are completely outside the Force, what does that imply for the Jedi and our beliefs?
It implies that our knowledge of the Force is an error or incomplete. Or it implies that the Vong are an aberration, a profanation of the Force, a thing that should not be.
He centered himself and tried to send the tension into the far distance. Are the Yuuzhan Vong outside the Force?
I have only what amounts to an opinion, and my opinion is this. By definition, the Force is all life, and all life is the Force. So therefore, the Yuuzhan Vong, who are living beings, are within the Force, even though we can't see them there.
Luke felt months-long tension draining from his limbs and a heavy stone fly weightless from his heart.
Thank you, he murmured. She looked at him and spoke with quiet intensity.
You owe to the Yuuzhan Vong the same measure of compassion you owe to all life. No war of extermination is justified. You will not have to eradicate this profanation from the heart of existence.
Luke bowed his head.
Thank you, he repeated. Why were you afraid of my answer? Verger asked.
Because if the enemy were not life, if they did not deserve compassion, then leading a war against them would have furnished a means of letting the dark side enter not only myself, but all the Jedi I have trained as well.
My understanding of your position then, Verger began,
is that such traits as anger and aggression are to be avoided because they may lead to domination of the mind and spirit by the dark side of the Force.
Luke nodded. Yes, your understanding is correct.
Then my next question is this. Do you believe that nature would have given us traits such as anger and aggression if they were not useful?
Useful for what? Luke countered. They are useful to the dark side.
What use does a Jedi have for anger and aggression?
The Jedi Code is specific. We act not from passion, but from serenity.
Vergère settled onto her stool. I understand now, she said. Our difference concerns where this serenity originates. You believe serenity is an absence of passion, but I believe it is a consequence of knowledge, and self-knowledge most of all.
If passion is not opposed to serenity, Luke said, why are they paired in the Jedi Code?
Because the consequences of these two states of mind are opposed to one another. An unchecked passion produces actions that are hasty, ill-considered, and often destructive. Serenity, on the other hand, may well result in no action at all. And when it does, serenity produces actions that proceed from knowledge and deliberation, if not from wisdom.
Vergère stroked her delicate whiskers and considered her next question.
It was my observation that on your last visit, you were angry with me.
That's true, Luke admitted.
Now my question is, was that anger dark?
Luke chose his thoughts carefully.
It could have been. If I had used that anger to strike out at you or harm you, particularly through the Force, then it would have been a dark passion.
Young Master, it is my contention that the anger you experienced was natural and useful. I caused deliberate harm, pain and anguish and suffering over a period of weeks to a young man for whom you had accepted responsibility and for whom you felt a measure of love. Naturally, you felt anger. Naturally, you wanted to break my thin little neck.
Vergère fell silent, and Luke let the silence build.
I'm about to ask a rhetorical question, Vergère said. You need not answer.
Thank you for the warning.
My rhetorical question is, why wasn't your anger dark? And my answer is, because you understood it. You understood the cause of the emotion, and therefore it did not seize power over you.
It is your contention, then, that to understand an emotion is to prevent its being dark.
Unreasoning passion is the province of darkness, Vergère said. But an understood emotion is not unreasoning. That is why the route to mastery is through self-knowledge.
Her tilted eyes widened.
It's not possible to suppress all emotion, nor is it desirable. An emotionless person is no more than a machine. But to understand the origin and nature of one's feelings, that is possible.
My turn for a question, Luke said. And at that point, a comm unit chimed.
Master Skywalker.
Nyla Kirk's voice.
A fleet has just arrived out of hyperspace, and they wish to contact you.
Vergère blinked at him. Next time, she said.
Luke rose. Next time, he said. Luke stepped aboard Wild Card to a salute from a double row of skull-headed, glowing-eyed droids with massive physiques and sloping foreheads. Luke returned the salute and marched down the line to be embraced by Lando Calrissian and to have his hand pumped by Talon Card. Card took Luke to his cabin, and Luke told Lando and Card of the latest developments in the Senate.
There have always been rumors about Fior Rodan, he said finally. Rumors that he's connected with smuggling operations on the Rim. If either of you know any of the details, perhaps you can help us.
Discredit Rodan by associating him with us, Card said and laughed.
No offense, Luke said.
None taken, Card said. Still,
he added, stroking his goatee. I think Lando and I can help your candidate along.
Alarm tingled along Luke's nerves.
How? He asked.
Card gave a private little smile.
It's best you don't know.
I don't want Cal Omas discredited, Luke said quickly. If you get caught in something shady, no one will believe that Cal wasn't behind it.
Luke, Lando said, we're just businessmen. We're trying to get government contracts. We have a perfectly legitimate reason for talking to anyone who could help us.
And we have 16 ships full of supplies that we're donating to the refugees on Mon Calamari, Card added. All courtesy of the Smugglers Alliance. So we're going to be very, very popular for a while, and politicians will want to be seen with us.
I'm not sure I like what I'm hearing, Luke said.
Then we'll change the subject, Card said smoothly.